Shabbat, we spoke about a little bit of an introduction to colors. So we know that the Mishnah tells us that there's a divin Torah that only red is considered to be a problem color, and even not all reds are considered to be problematic. Only certain shades of red are problematic. That's the divin Torah. Gemara derives from Pesukim, Ki Yipal B'chad Dovim Ben Dam L'Dam, etc. But nevertheless, the Mishnah, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Nida that in the days of the Amoraim already, they were very, very nervous about discerning with the different shades of red. And that's what the Rosh quotes in the Gaon, that we have a tradition that once something is red, so nobody's not their red anymore. All different types of reds are considered to be problematic today. The colors which are not red are not a problem. B'chalal, even b'zman hazeh would be permissible. So which colors are not red? So we spoke about Richas last year. We spoke about which colors are not considered to be red. So we said yellow, according to most of the folks, is not a problem. We said brown, according to many poskim, is not a problem. That's generally the way, at least I'm knowing, in terms of the yellows and the browns. But we ended off the shiur by saying one has to be very careful with both yellows and browns. Sometimes yellows and browns have red highlights on them, they have red tinges to them, so one has to be very careful within that area. There is another mahara, another color, that also falls into the red category. Whether this was an official red minator or not, doesn't matter. But it falls in the red category, that's what we call the pinks. So pink, we usually assume pink is also considered to be like red. I once wanted to say in Hilchos Yayin, Hilchos Bar Priyagofen, there's a Ramban sheet that Ramban says they're not supposed to make kiddush on white wine based on his reading of the Gemara in Bava Basra. So the question whether that even applies to his man is that some poskim said that the Ramban was talking about very cheap, kind of inferior kind of wine. The guy's got a $100 bottle of some French white wine or something, so it's hard to believe. The $5 bubbly soda red wine, that's okay, but the $100 French Bordeaux, I don't know, whatever it is, about that name. So we can't make Kiddush on it, it's hard to believe. So some Achrayim said, hopefully it doesn't apply to our fancy wines today. But whatever, according to the Ramban who said that you shouldn't make Kiddush on white wine. So the question is, what would he say about the pink wines? So the Gemara says that, according to the way the Ramban understood the Gemara, there has to be Adom, Alter Yayim Kis Adom. The Gemara quotes a Pasuk about wine being red. So the Ramban interpreted that to mean that it has to literally be red in order to be Yitzin Mitzvah of Kiddush. So Mikra then we don't pass this Ramban. Whatever the Ramban said, Mikra then we don't hold. Like Lechatchila, some poskim say to be chayish, but Mikra then we hold the white wines are kosher. But according to the Shittas Ramban, the white wine wouldn't be acceptable for Kiddush. What would he say about pink wine? So poskim pupils, pink like white, not like white. So I thought it's okay. I thought it's all right because the whole mocha for the Ramban is Alteria in Kis Adam, that it's supposed to be Adom. So in Uchas Nida we poskim pink is like red. So pink is like red in Uchas Nida. So then pink should be like red in Uchas Yaino. That was my personal. And then I thought it also was a raya because the pasuk that the Gemara quotes to support the idea that red wine is necessary, the way the Ramban read the Gemara, is that Ayteres Yayin Kis Adam. So that pasuk really, the word Adom there is not referring to the wine. The word Adom is referring to the person. It means if you drink a lot of wine, you're going to start to flush. You're going to start to turn red. So the Gemara is a drasha, according to the Ramban. So play on the word Adom, that just as the person turns red, so too the wine has to be red. So we know that when a person turns red, they don't really turn red. They don't turn red like a cherry. Usually they turn more of a pinkish color from drinking. So just as the word Adom, in terms of the Pshuta Shemik, is referring to the person, so to the Pshuta Shelter, the drasha should be referring to pink, should also be considered to be good. That was my personal horrors in this matter. So I'm not so machmir on the white wine in the first place, and if it's pink wine, so meekur then it would be okay. I was usually at a chasna, we're very makeable about this. At a chasna, we get white wine even like a chila, because you don't want to spill the wine on the kallah's dress. One time I was stuck beside a kedushin, there was no white wine. Usually the caterer has a bottle of white wine. One time there was mama, just regular red wine. So I remember I was shaking not to shake. I was so nervous, I was holding. I was standing like 3 feet away from the kallah, lest I would be the one to spill it all over her dress. So somebody told me that there's a certain rav, a chasher rav, who's beside a kedushin, who insists on red wine for the under the chuppah base in the sheet of the Ramban. I don't know if the Ramban even said it by other things. But whatever, he insists on having red wine under the chuppah. So somebody told me that this particular Rav was Mekel on pink, that he was a Mishas of Chacham. They only had the pink wine, so that he held was also was close enough. Anyway, get back to the story. So we assume that pink maras are considered to be like red maras, and they would be problematic. There is an important aura that Rav Osner has in his sefer, Shirei Shevet HaLevi, in Hilchos Nida. He has a very important aura, which shadow happens very, very common, is the following. Sometimes a mara will, if you look at the mara right away, it has a pinkish tinge to it, and then you put it down, you wait for a few hours, and it dries. eyes. It's not pink anymore. It's tan. It turns into a very lightish beige kind of amara. And the woman who I'm telling you was pink. I'm telling you was pink. What happened? So Avosna writes, so we know Maisi B'chol Yom that happened. So Avosna says that's not called pink. Pink means something that even after it dries, it's able to retain its pinkness. If we can't hold on to its pinkness until after it dries, there's a glowing Muslim afraid that was never really a pink. That was just a tanny kind of a pink. That's not the pink that the poskim are referring to. That's a common, a fairly common shaila. So pink is a problem if it's still pink a couple of hours later. But if it's a pink turning brown, turning tan, turning a whitish kind of a color, that's not, we assume that that's not a problem at all. Whenever we speak about looking at maros, so we have to be careful in terms of how exactly we're looking at them and when exactly we're looking at them. So we have to discuss now just some of the details in terms of looking at maros when they're wet, looking at maros when they're dry. We just mentioned before a difference possibly looking at maros under which kinds of lights and sunlight, electric light, etc. So just some important guidelines that the Rav should be familiar with. So the Gemara has a comment in Maseches Nida, when you look at Maras of Dam, so we apply the principle that's called Ein L'dayin L'masha Ein of Rav, that Rav was passing the Shail of Dam, can only go based on what he's seeing. It means if somebody tells him that if you would have looked at it yesterday, it would have looked like something else. But I didn't look at it yesterday, what do you want? So the Ein L'dayin L'makav V'shaita, you have to pass, you have to call him like you see him. So that's what I said, that's the English equivalent. That was the umpire, famous umpire said that, you got to call him like you see him. So that's the paraphrase of Ein L'dayin L'masha Ein Avros. So a Rav looking. The Shach says that Halacha is that Ein L'dayin L'masha Ein Avros. So again, everybody agrees that there's a basic Halacha of Ein L'dayin L'masha Ein Avros. You don't have to look into the past to see if it would have been read yesterday, so then it would have been answered. No, that's not, you don't have to be concerned about. But the Bach Chiddush is that you have to look to the future. The Shach doesn't mean even with that. So I think most Rabbanim don't are not so concerned with this. I mean, look at Maros whenever they come our way, whether it's wet, dry, whatever it is, you call them like it's in here. However, the problem is, the post we discuss, what if you have the following situation? A woman brings her shower to her rock Sunday morning at 8 o'clock, and she tells her the following. That this Mara, this shower, this Vikas book, this cast, whatever it was, this came from Friday. And the woman says to the rock, listen, I'm telling you what it looked like on Friday. It looked different on Friday. It looked redder on Friday. I'm not an expert in Hilchos Midas, but the way it looked to me, it looks red. So why am I bringing it to the Rav? Because my college teacher told me, don't ever decide. Never pass it for yourself. So I'm bringing it to the Rav on Sunday. But I'm telling you, you Rabbi, you're looking at now, it's brown, now it's yellow, now it's whitish, now it's beige. I'm telling you, it looked like it was red on Friday. Now it's the Rav. Come to folks, you can say, it depends on how serious this woman's statement is. So if the woman is saying that, that I'm telling you, I'm swearing, I'm going to tell you, this is not much red, it's bright red, and now, lo and behold, it looks brown. So come to folks, you can say, how can you say, in the dying of Lamash in a bro? In the dying of Lamash in a bro doesn't mean that we make believe that we're blind, doesn't mean we close our eyes to reality. If the woman's swearing, and that's what we're saying, not literally swearing, but she's insisting that it was mamish red, so then it's not a problem. So then of course the Rav is the Aseret Limafrei says, well, she has to declare that the way it looked yesterday was not a problem. But that's very often not the case. Sometimes a woman will say that, you know, I looked at it, and we'll see in a moment about what role the light plays in terms of looking at it, I looked at it, but the one maybe was red, I wasn't sure, a little bit nervous. So then, in the dying, the Mashiach wrote that he doesn't have any information to the contrary. So then he has to decide based on what based on the form, like you see it. This is going to be very, very tricky because sometimes in this area, Rav has to know the person, has to understand the person who's asking the shayla. This becomes a very, very a borderline issue in terms of, on the one hand, we always want to keep sneers as much as we can in Hilchos Nida. That's why most of them have systems set up for the person who does not have to identify themselves when they send the shayla. So everyone knows you can leave an envelope in the mailbox, you can put your phone number on, there's no need to put a name on it. So on the one hand, that's we try to preserve tzniyas, comfort as much as possible, those who don't want to identify themselves are. The other hand, it sometimes gets a little bit tricky, because sometimes it's important for the Rav to know who he's asking the shayla. And this is an example why sometimes it's important. Sometimes the Rav knows a particular woman has a history of being a little bit nervous. Now again, we don't want to encourage people to become lax in Hilchos Nida. On the other hand, we don't want to encourage people to become convulsive in Hilchos Nida either. So we want to get strike a little bit of a proper balance. We want proper Yerushimayim, but we don't want neurotic. So
politics, but sometimes, you know, a woman will come and say, Rabbi, I'm telling you, this was absolutely red, you know, 10 minutes ago, it was absolutely red. The rabbis were thinking, come on, it's not shy, it wasn't red. You looked at it, you thought it was red, you looked at it in the wrong light, you thought this. So that becomes a problem. If the woman is not swearing up and down that it was red, and the Rav knows that it wasn't red, so what do you do? They're both things say that the Rav has to know the case, you have to know case by case. If he really senses that this woman is exaggerating, not intentionally exaggerating, but she's out of the goodness of the heart, out of Yir Shemayim, she's presenting it worse than it really was. And the Rav is right to say, in the Dayan of Mashen of Rav, and if it looks like it's more than it is, it's more than it is. But if the Rav knows this particular woman, and she's not the kind of a woman who gets so neurotic, and every month she's sending 5,000 to the course with every little specs or something. She's someone who pretty much has an idea of what is a shayla, what's not a shayla. So then, and if this woman tells us, I'm telling you, this is red, so then Rav has to ask her to lemafreya. Again, this sometimes becomes a little bit of a trick of the trade to figure out exactly what the nature of the person is asking the question. Obviously, if you don't know who the person is, you just have a phone number, so then you have to grab the phone number. Unless if you don't know who the person is, of course you're not going to be able to figure this out. So again, this is something that each of us is trying to figure out on his own.
I just walked in, but I assume you're talking about something that's bigger than a gris.
No, it was on a bedika cloth, even the smallest amount is a problem. Bedika cloth, even the step is a problem. We'll talk about that a little bit later on.
Because you're expecting the time of
month? No, not even because of the time of month. Let's say a woman is in the middle of counting the Shiva Nikiyim, yeah. She's not counting the 7 days, so she's doing other bedikas, whatever other times of the month that she would be doing bedikas. So anything that's found on a bedika cloth, if it's a problematic color, even the mash, even the tiny speck is a problem. Someone just sent me a shayla just a couple of days ago. Somebody left me a shayla in the mailbox, and usually it's very obvious whether it's a bedika cloth or whether it's underwear. It's a big chacham to figure out if it's a bedika cloth or a bedika cloth. Underwear is underwear. But sometimes there are some women who they feel embarrassed. They don't want to send a whole pair of underwear. There are women who they tell their fathers to do that. So what they'll do is they'll cut out the shayla and they'll leave the shayla in the mess. Of course, they'll look at the big deal. But they feel more comfortable doing that rather than sending the whole pair of underwear. So what's the problem? The problem with that, it's okay as long as you tell the rabbi what you're doing, because sometimes we will cut out the pair of underwear and it'll look exactly about the shape, it'll look pretty much like a bigger cloth. Now the halacha is you don't see use dask to predate bigger cloth. It looks to be, I don't know when bigger cloth started to become commodity. I guarantee your great-great-grandmothers did not use pre-made bigger cloths from Switzerland. It's the kind of thing they make now. They use old schmatas. They take an old rag, they take an old undershirt, they rip it into pieces, that's a bigger cloth. So that's what women should be aware of that. That's what the post can say. If you're stuck, if you're on a trip somewhere, you grab an idea cloth, so you take your husband's undershirt and you make yourself a little square, a little bit of your clothes. So there are some women who like to use undershirts anyway, instead of regular bigger clothes, they claim that it's a softer. So there are sometimes a woman will send me a handmade, her own personal made bigger. So sometimes, I'm willing on occasion, you'll get a little something in the mailbox. And it's shaped pretty much like a square, and it's not a bedika cloth, but it's not a whole pair of underwear. So what is it? Is it a kashem or is it a bedika cloth? So I don't know. You don't tell me that, but I don't know what it is. So it can be all the difference in the world. Now, it can be the ladina, whether it's if there's less than a gris on it. If there's less than a gris, if it's a bedika cloth, it's a problem. If it's less than a gris on a kashem or underwear, then it's not a problem. So it would be very smart to tell the Rav what it is. It's always a good idea anyway to always mark on the envelope. Is this a bedika day 3? Is this a hashikar? Is this a moch? We'll talk about these terms as we go on, but because sometimes the rubber look at it a little bit different. I'll look at a big cloth on the seventh day, different than I'll look at a tzedara. And I'll be more noted to send it to somebody else, say they have a shayla, and I'm pretty convinced that it's also, but I want a second opinion. So if it's a bedika cloth on day 7, the woman standing waiting to go to the mikvah, I'll send it for a second opinion. If it's a tzedara, I may not send it for a second opinion. So again, so it's important to know what you're up to, what day you're up to. But here, this is the real estate of Ladina. So the person called me with this, person left this envelope with a phone number just 2 days ago. I left an envelope with a phone number. I looked at it, and it was definitely not a gris of red. No question that it was not a gris of red. There may have been a little bit of red on it. Maybe. It's hard to tell exactly if it wasn't such a good light. I wasn't sure. Maybe it was. So I called the person back, and I asked them one question. I said, is this a bedika cloth, or is this a pair of underwear? So they said to me, it's from a pair of underwear. I said, okay, then it's mukhar. So then I didn't have to go bother to look and see whether it was really red or not. If whatever little spot was what I was specific about was sure less than a gris. So I took it, I threw it in the garbage and finished. So then the person called me back like an hour later, and they said, they were just wondering for the last hour why I asked that question. I said, what's the difference? So I said to them, the difference was is that there was a small amount of possible red on it, and I personally didn't feel like wasting an hour looking and running around the sheet to try to find another opinion on it if it wasn't a yellow ice, if it was less than a gris, I said, was there anyway? So you saved me an hour trying to cold outside. Everybody said he has an story that you can't look at Mars after that when it's too cold. He said, because if you look at it too cold, you know, you get too cold, you run inside. And the winter time, we all moved to this. So that's one of the big advantages. I don't think anybody planned this when they built the Gluck Center. One of the big advantages of the Gluck Center over the other base measures is that there's great lighting. And all the hallways, they have this lighting center. Then when you take a look at the new base measures, so in the stairways, they have these tremendous windows, and the light comes in beautiful. It used to be, I remember, first of all, all the Rabbanim in the first hall knew which rooms were good at which times. So the sun would come in on the, you know, the east side of the building in the morning, during morning Seder, but there used to be classes. There were classes and rooms there. You couldn't spazier in to go look at Myers at that time of the day. But in the afternoon, you had to go to the other side of the building, but then there were English classes and that. So it was always a game in first hall to try to figure out which room to try to find the best sunlight. Luck is so far a bit of Machiah to do that. Yes. If you build a nice building, that's one of the signs of the kids. Yeah. Put the stuff to this room recorded over.
Okay. Regarding the mafreya and everything, what's the obligation, how fast you should get it to the Rav?
Yeah, that's another one. So the folks can say that you should really try to get Shilas to the Rav as soon as possible for a few reasons. So first of all, you know, true the name of Dayan and Lamash ain't a bro, but we all know the Messias Advar Mizu, you look at Amara 7 days later, it's going to look different than it looked the first. So, you know, you're not really supposed to look at Chilas, set up the situation, but the Amara significantly changes. The Amara should be brought right away. There are other reasons why the Amara should be brought right away. Number one. Number two, things tend to get lost in the house. I would tell you countless amounts of times that women are called with lost Medica Club. And she did a bedika, and then she left it in the bathroom to wait to bring it to the rug. The cleaning lady came, cleaned up the bathroom, she went to the garbage, and now it's gone. So what do you do? The suffix on a bedika is a very serious shayla. Not the portion at all, the suffix on a bedika club. But it's supposed to shayla the suffix, the rice on the chumra, it's not a roll. It gets very, it's a tricky shayla. That's another reason to make sure it gets to the rug right away. Another reason to make sure it gets to the rug right away, and I had this out with the... Some women in a very nice way. Some women don't want to bother the Rav. They don't want to bother the Rav with a shayla. What do they figure? What's the mindset? The mindset is like this thing. That why should I bother the Rav with this first day of the Dika clause? Then I'm probably going to have some more shaylas as the week goes on. So I'll collect them all together. I'll mark them nicely. On the seventh day, I'll bring all the Dika clause together and I'll show 14 Dika clause, or 7, whatever that. Show all at the same time. And again, the intention is good, and it's not to bother us. I think it's like Mahavlo, if I'm not like, you know, ladies and the Kuzari, the Kavanos coming to you about Masech, Edom to you. No, we said it in a little bit of a different context. So to remember what it means, good. I'm not going to say it publicly. So here also, the woman has the best of intention, but sometimes it comes out to be the biggest tircha in the world. Because what happens? So inevitably, she delivers the whole package on the seventh day. When on the seventh day? At 5:30. When she's getting ready to go to the mikvah. So now she realizes that the whole week of these courses have to be looked at. So now it becomes crunch time. So at 5:30, I just walked in the house. The kids are flying off the ceiling. Everything's happening. I gotta go run to the shiur in 10 minutes. And I got 14 bedikah clothes to look at, which are time sensitive, and the sun is setting now. If that happens, I gotta go run it. Again, I've explained to women in the past in a very, very nice way that you're not doing anybody any favors by doing that. So the best way to do the answer to your question is the best way to do it is to try to get it. If you have a shayla, bring the shayla. That's it. I'd much rather look at 7 different times in my own time. That way, if I'm in a rush and I can't look at it now, so I'll look at it now from now. You have a chuyuf to look at it the second day, you get it. Whatever you can. But it's much better than to have a system of bringing it at the end of the week. That's the answer to your question. Okay, anyway, getting back to the story. There are other things that you have to be aware of in looking at Maras, and that's the question of lighting. So the Gemara in the second Bracha Mishnah, they also give out this, about what kind of lighting is appropriate to look at Maras. The Gemara draws a distinction between the Or HaChadon or HaFana. The Gemara says you shouldn't look at Maras, you shouldn't look at Shilas on the Dikos or Summon, you shouldn't look at things by the moonlight, and by the starlight, and by the candlelight, and all kind of different Shvacha lights. The only kind of light you should look at is by the daylight. And the Gemara says, even not by the daylight itself, the Gemara speaks about looking at it a little bit in the shade, the Gemara talks about a little bit of the nuances, you hold it up to the light, and the shade in the hand, it's not a whole story. So one of the Acharonim in the Ma'ariv Shulchan Aruch, and even the Torah Shalom in the comments, and not all of us are happy about this, is none of them. Yeah, shot. Okay. We don't usually hold things up in such a perfect position with the tail, with the chama, with the whole. It's like look at the groin on the name or a movement in the or. So we're not so much made out of this man as that. So I'm right. He thinks the reason is these chumras that the Gemara says that you have to look at it in the perfect, absolute perfect kind of lighting. That's in the olden days when they were discerning between wicked reds. You want to know whether this is a red that's mutter or a red that's also. You better get the absolute best perfect lighting for this. It's going to be off by a mashu, and then the picture's going to be off by a mashu. It's not as that, as the Tzad Hashem, nobody's being made on reds anymore. It's clouds of reds, the browns, the yellows, the greens, the blues, whatever all the colors. Ramah writes that Amara blue is mutter. I don't know what we're doing on crack. I have never seen Amara blue back in my life. I have seen, like, purple kind of Amaras, which are usually not blood, usually something else. But we're not looking with such absolute and discerning to be the chad between red and red. We're not in the dam anymore. So Bizmanazet, well, we have pretty good lighting. So he looks at it, you can tell this is yellow ground, this is red, this is yellow. That's, you don't need such perfect absolute light with Bizmanazet. That's what we usually assume. Halach. Nevertheless, the folks can say that the better light is the daylight. So here, most of the folks can say that if a person really has experience in this area, they know what looks good and what looks bad, even in dielectric light. So it definitely seems to look dielectric light also. But usually what the guideline usually is follows, that if it's a shayla, that really can, if it's a shayla, it's not much clear. It's not much clear. They'll put it down as clear as day, it's not even a shayla. And then usually we'll just look at it in the nighttime. If it looks okay, it's not even the latest or something, then we won't even bother holding it to the next day. There's other bottom who don't like yours. Other bottom who just always, they won't look at anything at night. But make a day to look at things at night if you're really convinced that it's not a problem. If it's something that's any latest or something to it, and it's not on sensor, then you can wait till the next day. It's not like that, you wait till the next day. You put it away, you wait for a nice sunny day. What if you don't have a nice sunny day? Well, you gotta wait for a nice sunny day. So one time I was in LA and a call from the East Coast. It had been raining for a couple of days in the summer, and there was a particular shadow that had to be looked at. We're not going to miss that. And they wanted somebody to look at it in the sun. It was probably a close call, but they wanted to need some sun. They said, "What should you do?" So I said, "What's the weather forecast?" They said, "The next 3 days." So I said, "So just drop it in UPS and send me to California." I said, "I can guarantee you that it will be sunny 2 days in California. Sunny the whole summer in California. Never rains." Hospital here in control, so we can get this back. So I said, send me tomorrow. The UPS, I'm sure. So it was mutter in the design. Sometimes that if a woman, if somebody lives out of town, they should have to send things. They should find a rabbi they're comfortable with. They should send things. This UPS thing, so people do it all the time. I had a couple that a couple of years ago I was dealing with. I never met the couple. I had no idea who they were. The guy was in the army, the American army, he was stationed somewhere in the middle of Hoopersville, and they were sending me for 30 miles every month. Fort something, or North Kentucky, I don't know wherever they were. So they used 30 miles all the time, and then all of a sudden they stopped. So I assumed that it's usually a good time, it's not finished, I was pregnant. But I figured, okay, maybe yes, and I'll hear from him again. I never heard from him again, maybe he was. Didn't change to another, maybe he's now serving in Lakewood. I don't know where he is. I never remember this. They never called back. They never told me where they are. So I was able to help them for those couple of months. But again, back to the story. So you're supposed to look at Maris in the daytime. If it's a complicated child, then you should pack away till the daytime. You should pack away for the sunlight. If a person is looking at a mara at night, even if it's a close call and you have to look at it at night, something you have to do. We're going to mix it tonight. So you have to decide based on the electric light also. If the Rav's not comfortable answering on the electric light, you got to send it to somebody else who will be comfortable answering it. But sometimes push comes to shove, you got to answer based on the electric light. You have to be aware of two things when you look at mara on the electric light. So the two pieces of information are as follows. That two things. That's involved. Tend to make everything look bad, and fluorescent bulbs tend to make everything look good. That's just the way the nature of the light is. I don't know the details about it, but the incandescent bulbs tend to give a reddish tint to things which otherwise are not really red, and you take that, and the fluorescent bulbs tend to make everything look tannish, everything look brownish, even though things which may not be exactly brown. So now you have a shout, so which light should you look at? Then you're a machmir major. If you look at the coolers, you'll find the fluorescent bulbs. Look at the chumras, you'll look at the fluorescent bulbs. So I've done this many times. You can film the same mara and look under the fluorescent bulb, it looks more dark. Under the condensed bulb, it looks also. So what do you do? So the Rav's got to use his creativity, his imagination, and hopefully some experience to try to say, okay, what will this look like in sunlight? And I can't wait for sunlight. She's staying in the mixer. Wait until the mixer. I can't wait for tomorrow. If the Rav really doesn't know, you can't be making them if you don't know. So you have to find somebody else. You have to wait a day. But if the Rav is confident enough to make that judgment call that it appears that it's going to be mutter under the sunlight, so then one would be able to make them. That happens very, very often. So look at Paris that under both, a little bit under the incandescent and the fluorescent, and try to get a good sense as to what the true colors really are. There are bulbs out there that mimic sunlight, the sunlight bulb. They have to be honest. I know there are some of them who like them. I did buy one. I do own one. I haven't used them in a couple of years, the sunlight bulb. The real reason why I stopped using it is a little bit of a humorous one, but when I lived in Paramus, so I bought like one of sunlight bulbs. And I used to use it fairly often. Actually, I wasn't so happy with it. I know some Rabbanim might swear by it. I just never felt that it gave me this. I looked at it, and it does not look like the sun to me. I don't know if they're going to look at the sun, but somehow you don't get the sun. That's like that sunny look to it. I don't know. Whatever it says on the. Yes.
How much of a chiv is it on you to become technologically advanced in that respect, to checking colors?
Rabbi, always has to try.
Does that mean you should scan it on a computer?
No, we're going to get the computers in a second, but we have to get emailing Maris. We're going to get there in a second. So, Rav got tried, like, well, what there is a halacha? Like the OU and Run Zochus Kashas organization, they can't run Kashas at the 1800s, you gotta run Kashas according to whatever is available up to date information. We gotta try your best to look at the Shabbos best as possible. That's the truth. I wasn't like so convinced that this bulb was so helpful. I know there's some of them who like it, and I wasn't so thrilled about it. But I used to use it sometimes. But when I moved to Bergville, I stopped using it for the following reason. That when I was in Paramus, so we have to plug it into a socket. I used to have in my closet in Paramus, with the socket very, very low. I unscrewed the regular light bulb and stick this one in, look at the mouse. In Bergville, my sockets are much higher up. So I got to get in the ladder to screw it in. So as the joke goes, how many rabbis would take the screw in a light bulb? So it was a little bit more of a shivas nefesh to do it, and I say that wasn't the reason why I stopped using it. The real reason I stopped using it, I didn't really find it to be all that helpful. The times that I did use it, so now I just I use my own guts, and hopefully we get it right. Although there was a somewhat of a humorous situation where somebody brought me a shayla. It was humorous. The woman had to go to the mikveh that night, and it was a very close bull shayla, and the shayla came at night. And I wasn't 100% comfortable with it. And I looked at it, one line, another line, it's this book, Rabbi Shmaya, was Shkach HaProthis, that Rabbi Neuberg just happened to be driving down the block, and he had to bring me something else, he had to bring me a paper or something. So he knocked on the door and I said, Rabbi Neuberg, this is a perfect time. I said, hey, maybe you can help me here. So he insisted on climbing up on, not to change the light, but he insisted on climbing up on a stepladder to get closer to the light, to get a better look. So this was what was going on in the house. So me and Rav Neuberg were standing on a two step ladder together, maneuvering something, lying, and somebody walked into the house. Anyway, so we explained what we everybody. And then we forgot what the stop was, but that was, we tried out there. Anyway. So Mork and Deborah Pelskin have raised the question in terms of, is it possible you have a woman who a couple this far away and there's no one but them around, so give you a summer vacation or something, so you can hold on to your house and bring her back in 2 days from now. You look contentment. Yes, but what if it's not practical? A woman finds a child, a woman's in China, she finds a child on day 7, she's standing by the China Sea, whatever, ready to go to the mikvah. So what's she supposed to do? The question has been raised, can you send it, can you email Amara? I'm not as technologically advanced as you claim. Can you send a shot? Can you put it in the color, into the computer, get it and send it to a row? Is that good enough? So anyone know a little bit about color scanning or something? I don't know, tell you the truth, I have never looked at Amara over the computer. I am too nervous to do that. I know there are some Rabbanim who have, You know, but again, I don't know. You have to really find out from the mumchim. Is it really a perfect color? Yeah, he's talking about Mabusha. Right. I'm well aware of the fact that radiologists sitting there at this row looking at pictures from Columbia. Okay, that may be true, but I'm still not sure whether that technology exists in terms of the color to such a perfect extent that again, the difference between a Maritz Torah and Maritz Tomei is the Kulta Sara. I don't know. I'm not yet comfortable with that, but maybe the technology exists and they're plenty comfortable with it, so maybe it would be a potential option. But there's you that I get the only shaila that I will answer, which is sent over the computer like that, we often get mezuzah shailas like that. That a person calls me up and is describing to me what their doorposts look like. I don't know what you're talking about. So I'm not so good visually. So even when I see things, I have trouble when I was figuring out what's coming and going. The guy's described me with his mezuzah, mashko, whatever he looked at, I said, email me a picture. The problem is that 9 out of 10 times I can't figure out the email. What's going on? I don't see it. The perspective isn't right. You can't figure out. Well, people suddenly send an Arabian child. That comes and asks a complicated Arabian child. The person's drawing the pictures. I don't know what he's talking about. So sometimes looking at it on the computer will help, and if not, so again, go visit on site. And you got to take a look at the mezuzah, take a look at the Arabian style. It's hard to answer these kind of shots. So, because neither, I'm still not comfortable in that area, but I don't think we'll see what happens as ideas go on. There is another shot in terms of the looking at Maro, looking at someone who exactly is permitted to look at these things. In terms of the following question, can a husband look at the Maro of his own wife? Is there any issue involved in that? Is there any conflict of interest of a Rav looking at his own wife's shilas? So the Rizik Gemara, the second verse of the second Nida, tells us a strange story about Yalta. Yalta was the Rebbe of Rav Nachman. So you get the impression from other Gemara that she was a very interesting personality. When Chula, a lot of interesting things about her. She was the daughter of the Reish Galus system. She had some good political pull herself. So a Rebbe of Yalta, a Rebbe of Nachman, the Gemara tells a story how she had a certain shaykh that she brought it to a Rav to ask, and the Rav told her it was also, and then she said she knew better. It was really mutter. I got a whole story about her. So the Gemara says, how can it be if once somebody talks to his also, now let's go to another sack, and I go shop around with the suffix. That's why the Gemara has a discussion about that in the sack. So Taisa from the spot, the bottom of the obvious question, she's going to her husband. The Gemara says she's asking this Rav and that Rav, you know, whatever, or nothing.
The guy who? Oh, what are you doing now?
He goes, ask for the mitzvah to the
Shishan. What's going on here?
Why did she ask her husband? Taisa is looking around to figure out why. So Taisa said that maybe her husband wasn't a bucky, because the Maros. It could be that we already said that there was a certain number of Rav who didn't look at Maros. There's a certain Rav today. Usually not Rav, it's great to know, the bigger she really does look at Maris, essentially. It's not his expertise. So Rabat was an extra diet, possibly the name third, possibly the name Otis, but he was looking at Maris. That's the type of stuff. We're talking about some of the Rabbi Kaufman, the Choshur of who I know, who passes everything else, all other years along, except for Maris, and Kaufman, if you want. So, Rabbi Nachman Kaufman, Kashel Amaisa. The Taisa says, why Rabbi Nachman, those who are sitting in France, the 1100s, trying to figure out why in Bubble, 800 years ago, Rabbi Nachman didn't look at Maris, the Kashel, why look at Maris. So Taisa gives all these technical reasons why. Then Taisa has a fascinating reason. Taisa says that maybe Alta was afraid to show it to Rav Nachman because he was afraid that he would be too machmir on himself. It would be legal nofo. That would be something that he held as really mother. But she was nervous that he would, when he came to himself, he would just, he wouldn't be able to have the courage to pass in the Shaila properly. So she was nervous to show it to Rav Nachman. But then in his Perisha Mishnayis, the Rash, quotes a different shot. He says that he thinks that the reason why she didn't show it to Rav Nachman is because Rav Nachman is not supposed to pass him. He's not supposed to pass him. Shaila is on your wife. So the Rosh asks to himself, why is that true? Now that I'm passing your own shaila, he said, if I have a kasha shaila, I'm not allowed to answer a kasha shaila in my own kitchen. He said, if I have a shabbos shaila, I'm not allowed to answer my own shaila. Every time I have a shaila for shabbos, if I know BS, I gotta call him. He said, who ever heard such a thing? So the Rosh throws the following distinction. He thinks maybe there's a difference between what's called a cheskes isser and kachas or non cheskes isser. But the Gemara tells us in the second Yevamos that there's a rule of Eidech and Erem Bisurin, that if one witness comes and tells you that something is kosher, you're allowed to believe them, unless they're coming to change what the chazaka was. I knew that something was straight until now, and now they're coming to change something. Chazaka, I don't know all the details, it takes some spice, it's a long story, but Eidech is Nehemot, there's no cheskes isser. If the cheskes isser, then the Eidech is not Nehemot. So the Gemara asks the question, in case, how can a shaykh ever be Nehemot? The guy tells you, shaykh the chickens. The chicken was the cheskes, so you weren't allowed to eat the chicken when it was alive. You know, he's telling you, you're allowed to eat the chicken. So he's changing the cheskes, right? So the Gemara says, no, that's not called the cheskes, but that's the other. He could check himself, so therefore he has a certain degree of Nehemot. Again, I'm I'm taking a big shortcut through a lot of sugyos in Sheshmaitz, but not for now. But other areas of Al-Hafa, when there's a real chesed, if there's an erech, Al-Hafa would not have them on it. So the Rosh is a similarity. Maybe that's the same thing over here. When you have a question, there's no chesed, I have a shiloh. Is it mutter on Shabbos or other Shabbos? No chesed, sir. I want to know, Rabbi, can I put the chum pot in the fire and not put it in the fire? So the rabbi knows the answer. He can pass it to shiloh. Well, they have a question. A little bit of milk fell into this pot of chum. So is it also the mutter? Is it both of them? Probably. I can pass it on shiloh. That's not a problem. But Hilchos Nida, if the woman is already a surah, and I'm trying to retire her, I'm trying to pass in Charlotte, she's going to become a parent, I'm trying to change the chesed, but maybe you can argue that's called a problem, that's called growing up against the chesed, and the husband wouldn't be there, the chesed, maybe the husband has an idea with her, maybe he's going to be Nekel Shalot, not Machra, as I said, he's going to be Nekel Shalot Yedin, and therefore he wouldn't have any Yamamah, so the relative would need against the chesed, that's quite a chumrah. According to that, that would put the brakes of saying Shiloh, that a husband wouldn't be able to answer. Let's say, we said in the past that an Hesek Tower is called against the Hesek Tzitzit, and the Deacon is not a Hesek Tzitzit, so it would be an unbelievable chumrah. A husband can't pass his own Hesek Tower Shiloh. He can't pass his own Tzvi with the Mitzvah Shiloh. That's against the Hesek Tzitzit. So we usually don't pass it. I think that the minute most of us I know, is that if you know the answer, you pass in your wife Shiloh also. Unless you personally think you're going to be too machmir, and then you have a machmir yalta, problem. But otherwise, a person knows he's not machmir to go run to ask. A husband has a shalat, has a power of his wife, he's machmir to go run next door to find another rabbi to pass. And usually they're not married with his rash. I think we assume halacha, like the older days, and that there was nothing intrinsically wrong with Nachman passing, it's just that he wasn't a bucky. So someone who feels that they're able to pass him, so can pass him on their wife's shalat as well. The whole part of the idea of a Marazam is a complicated point area of Hilchos Nida. So the basic din Min HaTorah is even wooden reds is sometimes permissible. The basic din which practiced today is that all reds are problematic, but even with Van Azeh, there are other colors, the yellows, the browns, the funny things that we spoke about the red of the Shir. We said the Kitzin Imrits, for those who missed the first 2 minutes of the Shir, we said that pink is a problem. Pink is in the red family, but many pinks are only temporary pinks. Very often the pink will dry immediately and will turn into a tannish, brownish. The poskim and maker, those are not really pinks. Again, the rub would have to look and see whether it's a real pink or a fake pink, whether it would be a problem or not. So again, certain colors are not problematic. The quality of many of us are married today. And then the rub has to always be aware of what he's looking at. He's looking at it, which kind of light he's looking at, what it's wet, what it's dry, moonbar, and oldbar. And then to figure out who exactly is supposed to be looking at these models.
Okay, that's the thing.